Support for this News from Lake Wobegon podcast comes from the Sleep Number bed by Select Comfort, the bed that lets you adjust the mattress firmness to your preference, your sleep number.
Well, it's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, out on the edge of the prairie, my hometown. We're coming to the end of this warm spell in November, and it is none too soon. Need to get real here and go on much longer with this sort of weather in November, and it just encourages people to entertain all kinds of illusions. And one day you get a letter from your brother-in-law saying that they've mortgaged the house so they can have cosmetic surgery and make a video or something. It's just, we need to get into winter and get into some reality. Clarence Bunsen got the Christmas letter early from his old classmate at St. Olaf, Pastor Cliff down in Iowa, who said that he had decided to resign the pastorate because he figured it was now or never to write the great Norwegian-American novel about his ancestors who came over from Bergen and Stavanger and settled out in western Minnesota near Canby and were farmers and lost their shirts in the Depression and sent all of their kids to St. Olaf College and went into great debt to do so. So he's going to leave the ministry and he's going to move back to the family farm, and they're going to renovate a chicken coop there, he and Karen, and she's going to go to work in a daycare center to support him so that he can write the novel. And he figures it should take him about a year or a year and a half. 63 years old, and the man does not have any savings. It's nothing that a sensible person would do, but it's the sort of thing that comes from having temperatures in the 70s in the middle of November. Clarence Bunsen met Cliff in a parking lot at St. Olaf College 47 years ago, 1954. It was in the fall. Two young men getting their stuff out of their parents' cars. Nowadays, I suppose students arrive at St. Olaf with microwaves and VCRs and televisions and vibrating recliner chairs and refrigerators with ice makers, but they only had a few things. They just had cardboard suitcases with their clothing in it and a few books, including the Bible, and they had a little radio. They were roommates. It was Clarence's little blue radio. And they went to their room, which was in Itterbo Hall. This is the old Itterbo Hall, not the new one. They've got a new one here. I haven't seen it, but I understand there are luxurious suites in it, and it's definitely a high-end student residence. But back then, it was just a ratty old dorm, and they had an old black dog named Itterbo who slept there and took his meals at the cafeteria. I doubt that they have a dog there anymore, unless maybe it's a wolfhound or a pedigree dog. So much has changed. So much has changed over the years, I could tell you. They were dating the women who would become their wives. Within 2 weeks, they had met them and were seriously courting them. They were Norwegian. They wanted to get this settled and out of the way. Clarence had met Arlene. She sang in the St. Olaf choir, and he tried to join the choir in order to get to know her better, and he was turned down because he had then, as he still has, a range of about 3 notes. And though he feels that he's singing a hymn, actually it's a kind of a drone. And whenever Clarence is missing from Lake Wobegon Lutheran Church on a Sunday morning, people stand up and sing a hymn and they look around at each other. What's different? What's happened here? Why does this suddenly sound musical? What are we doing differently? But he met Arlene and he lay siege to her, and he intended to give her his ring to have things all settled by the time Thanksgiving rolled around. Now, this was back in a different era, and this was back when You came to St. Olaf and you were not supposed to come home or call until Thanksgiving. And you were only supposed to call if you were in the hospital or if you'd been in an automobile accident and were in serious condition or worse. A long-distance phone call was a big deal then. Nowadays, of course, students have cell phones and they walk around and they're talking to their parents 8 or 9 or 10 times a day, but back then they didn't. He knew that he was going to have to go home for Thanksgiving and he wanted to have this taken care of by the time he did. Then, as now, Thanksgiving was a mandatory holiday in Lake Wobegon. Still is. You might call up your mother if you were my age and you might say, you know, we were thinking. We were thinking maybe we'd just stay here and have Thanksgiving just us, you know. Jenny and I and the kids and some friends. And your mother would say, well, that's fine, honey. That's fine. You do that. I only want is to make you happy. I don't want anybody to come to Thanksgiving who doesn't want to be there. I would rather sit alone and eat a TV turkey dinner and watch the parade on television than to have anybody at my table who does not want to be there. I would rather sell the house and move to the Good Shepherd home where I'm sure I would find friends and people who really genuinely wanted to be with me. So you go home for Thanksgiving. You go back to your mother's. People do this year after year after year. There are women in this world, because they married into Lake Wobegon families, there are women in their 50s who have never roasted a turkey. They always went to the Queen Mother's home for Thanksgiving, and they were daughters-in-law, not qualified to handle food, so they have no idea how this is done. Now, this is entirely different, of course, from the lives of prodigal sons and daughters who move away to Los Angeles or New York City. Thanksgiving is entirely different for them. You spend Thanksgiving at home, then in your apartment, and in front of the movie channel, eating food out of little white cardboard cartons, little shrimp and garlic sauce and some little pork dumplings. You and this woman next to you. What is her name, anyway? Met her at the club last night. Now, here she is. Was it Kimberly or Timberly or Lindsay or what? You're going to have to wait until she goes to the bathroom, and then you can check her billfold. Entirely different from a Lake Wobegon Thanksgiving. In Lake Wobegon, we have about a 50-pound turkey, a turkey about the size of a bathtub, and it's been injected over the past 24 hours with about 6 pounds of butter. And we have a couple pounds of potatoes, sweet potatoes and mashed potatoes, and they have about 2 pounds more of butter. And we sit around the table and we gradually go into a stupor until we can't remember our own social security number. And then we go in and watch football for a while, and that doesn't improve things. Anyway, Clarence knew he was going to have to go home, so he wanted to have a chance to talk to Arlene about the future. He and Arlene and Clint and the woman who became his wife, Karen, went down to the town, to the Bijou Theater, to a double feature, and then they walked around town for a while, the men wondering how they could bring up the subject, and then they went back to the dorm, and of course the doors were locked. It was after 9 o'clock. Now, of course, today this is entirely different. There are no rules whatsoever. I mean, back then, every student at St. Olaf had to go to chapel every weekday morning at 11 o'clock. Nowadays, I mean, students are just waking up at 11 o'clock. But back then, it was entirely different. I doubt that there's any curfew today ever. But they were shut out of their own rooms, so the boys had to shinny up a rain pipe and come down and open up the back door and bring the girls up to their room in Iterbo Hall. Four young people in a dim room with one candle burning. And they settled in on the couch and the bed. The young men pressing forward as fast as they could. The young women trying to put on the brakes, just to slow things down, not to put it into reverse. And there they were, and great passion and hormones flickering in this room at St. Olaf. And then they heard a kind of a wheezing sound. And they looked into the corner, and there was the old black dog, Iterbo. He had a disapproving look on his face. He looked like your grandfather. It was a characteristic of his. He could make people drop things, just one look in his eye, and they knew how terribly wrong they had been. And then he advanced towards the bed, and he sniffed Cliff. He sniffed Cliff as Cliff was bending over to pick up his pants. And Cliff was propelled through the air. And he hit the wall, and he knocked the radio, and it fell on the floor, and the moment it hit the floor, it came on. And it came on, and it was WCAL. And it was the St. Olaf Choir singing Den Store Wilde Flock, the Great White Host, the great Norwegian funeral hymn. They stood in wonder, the presence of love and death in one place at one time. It was just the day after that that Cliff started talking about going into the ministry. It made a big impression on them. Now that's what you should write a novel about. Shouldn't write it about your ancestors who came over from Norway, who took the boat out of Bergen, surrounded by snowy mountains, one of the most beautiful cities in all of Europe, and came out to western Minnesota, treeless, windy, out there on the plains, and worked harder than they'd ever imagined a person could. They worked like beasts of burden on those farms, and when they thought they were someplace, then the Depression and the Dust Bowl came in, and they were blown away and lost their farms, and yet they believed in education. They sent their children to St. Olaf College. They had no money, but the kids worked, and the parents went into debt. And one by one, the students came to St. Olaf, and they found whatever they found, and they went off to their lives. That's not the story. The story is in that room with the old black dog and the four people in semi-undress and all of that passion and all of that life. You can't write about people you don't know. And those ancestors, they did all too well to conceal themselves from their own children and to hide their grief and hide their feelings. You need characters to make a story. The dog could write that novel. Everything you need for a novel happens at about dog height. That's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong and all the men are good-looking and all the children are above average.